Hey, PDU crew, it's Velio Matas on Package Design Unboxed. Today we got a chance to speak to Scott Bierzak, who's a type designer. We also got a chance to learn what it's like to create type, the process, how it's more like illustration than you think. We get into the fact that he created a typeface right out of school, which he thought kind of maybe wasn't that good. He was only making a couple bucks here and there on licenses. And then all of a sudden, years later, he gets hit with a huge check because a major agency in New York picked up his typeface as the feature for a major rebrand. He also gives us a lot of different cues in terms of what typefaces to be using, how to pair type. And sometimes you think that there's like a limit in how many typefaces you can actually use on a pack, but there's not. We learned a ton from Scott. I think you're going to dig this episode. Let me know what you think. Leave a review when you get a chance. All right, let's get to the show.
What kinds of cardboard box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
It loses its value if you take it out of the packaging.
All right, dude. So, Scott, dude, you do type and like all sorts of crazy shit, and you do some amazing design. I've had the pleasure of working with you a while back, but you're like in this. All right. So, you're like in a foam felt booth, and you're talking about in the office. So, where are you officing?
I am co-work. It's a co-working space called Y4. Y4 itself is the agency, but then like they share the space itself with other creatives and, you know, folks in the valley to just come in and see some humans every once in a while. So that's kind of what I do.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm gonna have to check that out, dude. I'm stuck in my house like 24/7.
I was the same way, and I was like, I gotta get out of here. And a short time ago, I was working with Doug at Brand Loyal, and we were all like working out of the Menorca downtown, and then, you know, through a series of events, we've ended up here. It's a long story, but that's how we got here.
That's awesome, yeah. So, all right, dude. So, what do you do? Who are you, and what do you do?
My name is Scott Bierzak. I'm a freelance designer, illustrator, typographer. I try to do pretty much everything within the typography realm. So, you know, whatever that may be, it could be calligraphy, sign painting, type design, lettering, the whole kit and caboodle, as they say. So that's pretty much my spiel.
How do you decide to become a type designer?
that's a great question. You know, you just got to be, obsessed with letter forms. Like, that's kind of what happened with me. It definitely started probably my sophomore year of college. We, you know, had a type class. It was very much like painting letter forms by the millimeter, you know, and if you didn't get the right, you know, counterform curvature, you're using, you know, we're painting with placa, and we're painting the positive and negative space. And I think through that sort of like super niche process of painting letter forms, I developed an eye for like the intricacies and the subtleties of creating a letter form. And then it kind of just spiraled. Like, I started getting into lettering, and then lettering was like the gateway drug into type design. And, you know, I've just followed this path ever since, pretty much.
All right. So you went to school here in Arizona.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you shipped out to New York.
That's correct. Yeah. So right. I finished up my bachelor's here in Phoenix. And then I told myself, like, well, I'm already in this like school mindset, so I might as well continue going to school. And at that point, when I was a senior, I told myself, like, I'm like obsessed with type. So I'd love to go to the Type at Cooper program in New York City. And that's exactly what I did. So I applied. Thankfully, I got accepted. And then moved out there, did that program for a year. And then shortly after, moved back to Phoenix.
Wow. That's right. And while you were there, you spent some time, I think, at Stranger. Is that right?
I was working at Stranger and Stranger for a short time. Yeah, it was difficult to manage both the job and going to school. So I had to make the decision to sadly part ways with Stranger and Stranger and focus solely on school. And that's kind of when I went full-time freelance. Like, I just told myself, well, now's the only time I can make this work, as well as like figuring out my school schedule. So I've been freelancing ever since.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
I remember when you moved to New York, I was so jealous, not of moving to New York, but just so jealous of like your commitment to go back to school.
Thanks, man.
You know, like kind of like, and just focus on one thing. Like I think, as I've gotten older, I'm like, yeah, I'd like to learn this, but man, I know this one thing. I'm good at this one thing.
Right.
I'd like to learn something else, but then it's like, I don't know, you just don't have time. Right. Or you, yeah. you find like a million excuses not to do it. So like seeing you commit was awesome.
Yeah.
That was rad, man. So then you were at Stranger for a little bit, and then you've done freelance. And you also teach a type class on Skillshare.
On Skillshare, I'm actually creating one with Domestika right now. Mm-hmm. I was just teaching at ASU. The term just ended.
Yep.
I don't know if that situation will continue, but yeah, I've been enjoying the teaching process as well. So I feel like I've reached a point in my career where I can sort of like, you know, give back this education that I have received and try to, you know, help younger students as well. And it's been really rewarding. I really enjoy teaching as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I taught this past semester at ASU.
Oh, nice.
Teaching as well. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was in person. It was my getting out of the house.
Yeah.
Like once a week and seeing new people. So yeah, it was really rad.
Which class did you teach at? Like, was it a 300, 400? Or like, I'm curious, like where the students were.
Yeah, it was a 400. It was in the design building downstairs.
Okay.
You know, like one of those little studios down there.
That's awesome. I'm glad they're bringing you in, man.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. It was one semester.
Yeah, that's same for me too. One semester, and I was like, okay, that is like a nice intro into it. And I'm curious to see if it will continue on, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you did Skillshare, and now you're doing a class on Domestika. So you're recording that now, or you're kind of planning it out?
Yeah, everything's in the planning stages. I'm going to fly out to New York again, probably in August is the tentative date to go film everything. And so like that class itself probably won't go live publicly until, you know, honestly, next year after all the editing and everything that needs to take place. So it's in the works. It's definitely been a process. We started a while back and, you know, COVID has definitely made it a bit of a challenge. Yeah. So,
yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah.
So, all right, just you popped up in my LinkedIn feed like 2 weeks ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Because JKR, you know, they rebranded Magnolia Bakery. And then your post was like, I don't know, that you were stoked that they used your typeface.
Yeah.
But that you didn't know about it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. I had no idea. The funny thing is, so the typeface they use is called Gatefold. Mm-hmm. This is the typeface I started in the Type at Cooper program, but I finished it like a year or two after when I moved back to Phoenix. And so this typeface is sold via a foundry. And I eventually, you know, get royalties here and there every couple months and stuff from this typeface, but it's usually like $30 or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a small amount because it is my first typeface. And so I thought like, well, maybe this typeface isn't that good. One day I got a larger than expected payment, and I literally emailed the guy at the Designer's Foundry, which is the foundry that sells this typeface, and I said, hey, is this a mistake? Like I shouldn't be getting this much money, because you know, normally I'm so used to these like $30 payments every 3 or 4 months. So like I'm literally making almost nothing on this typeface. And I got this larger than normal payment, and he's like, nope, somebody like bought a bunch of licenses for Gatefold, and that's it. That was the end of the conversation. I was like, okay, cool. And then like probably a month or two went by, and Daniel followed back up, and he's like, hey, just so you know, like here's the link to that, you know, large sum of licenses that was purchased. And he shared the link to I think it was an article on, you know, it might have been the Die Line or something, one of these like bigger publications that shared this rebrand. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I had no idea. I just assumed like, oh, somebody bought a bunch of licenses, and I didn't think anything of it. I didn't put, I guess, two and two together. And that's kind of how I found out. He was the one that shared with me, you know, that, hey, JKR did this rebrand, and here's all the imagery. And like they posted, you know, all the the photography for, you know, all the rad stuff that they designed. And that's how I found out. So
wow, that's pretty cool. Awesome, man. I'm like, you know, just kind of waking up and seeing your work out there is pretty awesome, man.
Yeah.
So what do you do to follow up? So have you worked with JKR before?
There have been two opportunities where I've been really close, where I'm like pitching or I'm sending out quotes and stuff. So they've reached out about designing typefaces or lettering stuff. So very particular projects, and it just never panned out. And like, even with this thing, like I wasn't associated with it other than like they came in and bought the typeface. So, one of these days I'll work with them directly, but yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I was pretty sick to get a chance to work with those guys a while ago.
Nice.
It's always pretty cool. Like when you get to work with an agency that you kind of look up to, it's always pretty cool.
Big shots. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, it does. So what do you do now? All right. So they used your typeface. Do you follow up with JKR and go, hey guys, thanks so much for this, blah, blah, blah. And like,
oh yeah, I definitely I saw the post on LinkedIn as well. In social media, and I had to like reach out to, I don't have any direct contacts there that were working on this project in particular. And so I just like posted on social media and replied to them essentially saying like, thanks so much. Like I had no idea. I appreciate it. And like, as for like, following up in terms of other stuff, like I shared it on social media myself, tagged Magnolia Bakery, and then they saw that I was a part of it and they reached out and were like, hey, we want to send you some goodies. So I got like a bunch of like pudding and cupcakes and stuff. So it kind of worked out nicely. And I had no idea that was going to happen either. They just like were nice enough to send me some treats.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's cool, man. So, all right, dude. So we worked together on a project, and I don't know. I still don't know how the hell you do what you do. Right. So like I'm looking at your site, I'm looking at the stuff you've done for Oatly. I'm looking at, the stuff that you did for Atlassian. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everything. Like, how do you communicate emotion with type, and how do you even know where to start?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like my bread and butter. I think people realize that I can convey that emotion with type. I guess to boil it down, typography has and can display characteristics that are going to evoke certain emotions. So let's say the type is on an arc and the letter forms are really tall and narrow, and maybe they have like a jagged edge to them. That gives it a bit more life and energy that might feel, somewhat electric, right? And maybe the word itself says the word electric, or maybe it says energy, or maybe it says, whatever that word is, the word itself is going to depict emotion. And then obviously the characteristics of how you're drawing it is going to depict emotion. And so I try to sort of break it down and boil it down to what emotion I'm trying to evoke, and then try to understand, okay, what kind of characteristics would help sort of evoke that emotion. Like, is this letter form going to be super bold? Is it going to be super condensed? Is it super extended? Is it, are the counterforms really, really tiny? There's so many like little nuances of things that you can tweak about a letter form. And that ultimately is going to inform, the look and feel, and ultimately get across that personality and that sort of energy that you're trying to evoke. So yeah, it's hard to say, like, hopefully that sort of like explains it a little bit.
Not even a little bit, man. Still lost. No, so like, all right. So like, let's say you've got a small agency, not a JKR, right? Just I don't know what an ABC agency, right? And they're looking for, they're doing a small rebrand of a mom and pop shop. Mm-hmm. When they reach out to you, I guess, should they reach out to you, or should they kind of go through and look for, go through like the Design Foundry and find, find a typeface that makes sense for them? And what does that even mean? Like, how do you search through all the different typefaces? Because today there's millions, right? Like, I don't know, like when I was going to school, there was like set foundries. And that was it. It wasn't like randomness. It was at the very beginning of like fonts.com.
Yeah.
There's like 100 fonts on there, and that was it. And now it's insane. Yeah. So how does the designer begin to even go through those fonts? Like how do they figure out what they're looking for?
I get this a lot from students, actually. So kind of, again, it kind of depends on like, what's the personality? What's the vibe we're trying to achieve? And so how I would go about it if I was searching for something very in particular, I kind of have somewhat of an idea in the back of my head of like, okay, I kind of know that, you know, maybe this typeface family is going to be a serif. And so that automatically gets rid of everything else that you have to like sort through, right? So there's, you've got your sans serif, maybe your display typefaces, maybe a script or something, and you know you're not going to look at all that. So you know, okay, I'm looking for a serif. And then in serif, there's like, okay, I'm looking for maybe reverse contrast, where the thick and the thins aren't on your left and right, but the top and bottom. Maybe you're looking for something thin and wispy. And so that kind of depends on like, again, like what's the goal you're trying to achieve with this packaging? Who's the audience? You know, what's the age range? Where's it going to live? So all these sort of questions you have to ask yourself will ultimately inform the kind of typeface that you're looking for. So, you know, for example, if you're designing, obviously, like in your case, if you're designing packaging and you know that it's going to live on the shelf next to, you know, hundreds of other products that look somewhat similar, maybe your best bet is to stray away from everything else that's already on the shelf and design something, obviously, that is going to stick out from everything else. And one of those things may be, okay, well, maybe we have a really bold, condensed typeface that takes up the entirety of this packaging because all the packaging around it might have imagery. And so what if we focus solely on type because these other packages are using illustrations or photography or whatever? And so that could be a way to stick out from everybody else. But, you know, so again, like kind of going back to those questions, you have to ask yourself all these situations of where this type's going to live, who's going to view it, all that stuff, because that will inform, you know, the kind of type that you're looking for, you know, because you're not going to select, you know, let's say like elderly folks might read this packaging, but their eyesight might not be as good. So you have to make the type larger than you expect. And if it's larger, maybe you need to set it in a display typeface as opposed to a text typeface. And the difference is there for those of you listening. A display is generally going to have more personality and character. You can get away with a lot of like really nuanced, tiny details in typography. Whereas if you were to take that same display typeface, shrink it down to a text size, such as like 12-point font, and you use it in that size, it's not going to read or look as good. So so type designers design a display typeface and a text typeface so that you can use them interchangeably in the right size that they're designed for. So again, hopefully that was like a long-winded explanation to sort of like
that was good. For sure, 100%, man. Okay. So like, I know like when I'm looking at packaging, there's certain things that just irk me where I'm like, oh, they you know, it's like so many people make the same kind of mistakes. So when it comes to type, what are the mistakes that you see a lot of designers making?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, a lot of the mistakes might just come down to typesetting itself. So, you know, you understanding when to use an N dash versus an M dash or a hyphen, or having
So when do you use an N dash and when do you use an M dash?
Oh boy. Put me on the spot here. All right. So what I generally do, an N dash, I believe, is going to be used between dates, two points of time. An M dash with an EM is generally like a break in thought. So, you know, a lot of people probably interchangeably use that with like an ellipsis, you know, the three dots. It's kind of like a break in thought where you can, you know, start a new line, start a new idea, and then continue on with your sentence. And I think generally M dashes are used with quotes. So if you're like quoting somebody, you know, you have your quote up top and you have your M dash and then the person's name that said that quote. I could be wrong. For those of you listening again, I'm pretty sure, but I could be wrong. But yeah, stuff like that. Or like if you have like a widow, like a word that's just chilling by itself and it needs like some other words down there. So it doesn't seem so isolated or broken, or like checking the rag on your typeface or the block of type that you're setting, like stuff like that.
Okay. So when you're setting a block of type and you talk about the let's say we're looking at the ragged right. What's a good tip that you can give somebody? Like, should the top line be longer or should the top line be shorter?
You know, I don't think there's a right or wrong there personally, because I've used both. So I've used a shorter line on the top, uh-huh. and then you of course like fall through from there. And I've used a longer line on top, and you just got to make sure your rag is even. That's essentially all it is. Like, and sometimes you might have a rag that looks like a triangle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's bad. Like, that doesn't read very well. So it's just a matter of like making it flow nicely. And again, I don't think there's a right or a wrong with like how to start it. It's more about how you finish it, because that's where I see a lot more mistakes, or at least like things that don't look as pleasing to the eye, because they might have like a widow or an orphan or, you know, whatever.
Sure. What's something you see a lot of young designers doing? You know, what are, like, if you can give them one tip of what not to do that you see them doing, especially with students, what would that be?
Man, yeah, that's a tough one too. Like, obviously, being students, there's so much that you have to learn, and there's so much that you're sort of like taking into account. Because when I was a student, I was like wandering aimlessly, right?
Yeah.
But when it comes to type, I would say learn, you know, when and how to use certain typefaces. So it's almost like understanding your typeface pairings, and how to pair typefaces, because that's where, you can make or break packaging just based on your typeface pairing. You know, some typefaces might not pair as well together. And that's one thing students definitely struggle more so with, because they're not really taught, or at least it seems, mm-hmm. it's not as taught as much, maybe compared to some other concepts and topics in school. So it might just be spending a bit more time on understanding how type pairs well together.
Sure. You know, one site I use is TypeWolf.
Oh, yeah.
For pairings.
Yeah, he's got great stuff there.
Yeah, for sure. So if anybody's wondering, you know, how to pair things, that's just a good resource.
Yes, highly recommend.
Then in terms of like, you know, when you see a layout, like, what's the appropriate number of different fonts somebody should be using, right? Because I see sometimes unless it's like a concert poster that's like completely crazy,
yeah.
like that's one thing. But if it's, you know, packaging or signage, sometimes when you see somebody using like four or five different ones, you know, like mm-hmm. what are some of your go-to tips?
You mean like in terms of the amount of fonts you should use or styles you should use?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, in my opinion, there's no hard or fast rules here. I know a lot of people might say, you know, keep it minimal, right? Like 3 to 4, maybe 5. But I've seen packaging where they use 10 styles and up, and it works. But the reason it works is because the person that's designed this packaging has an understanding of how these varying typefaces work together. So they're not only like 10 random typefaces, they're 10 typefaces or styles that work and jive together somehow through weight, through width, through, you know, other varying characteristics of the type. And in my opinion, you can get away with stuff like that for very specific projects. You know, obviously every sort of, you know, piece of packaging out there is not going to be able to benefit from that many styles, but there's certain things like, gosh, I don't have anything off the top of my head, but I've seen it done before, and you know, it can look good. But yeah, obviously if you go the minimal approach, 3 to 4, that's like an easy, safe bet. Again, it kind of just comes down to like understanding, you know, what is making them all work together. And a lot of that is just understanding how, again, typefaces pair together through the characteristics that they have. So paying attention to the contrast, the width, the weight, the personality of them, the display, is it text, all sorts of questions to ask yourself. And then, you know, what you could do is just like literally line them up, turn down the opacity of one, and see if like those characters sort of like match, or at least pair in a way where the similarities are more visible. And that's how you know a typeface sort of like pairs with one another, is when probably three or more characteristics sort of like align, that's when you know a typeface is going to pair well.
So like Facebook, you did stickers for Facebook. I don't know if you can still use stickers on Facebook or not.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're still going, you know, I feel like I've done stickers for a lot of folks. As soon as I did stickers for Snapchat, it was like, everybody was like, oh, Scott can do stickers. And then I've did so many projects regarding stickers.
And that was like full illustration. So that was illustration and type. When you're doing something like that, you're designing the type specific to that illustration, or are you designing an entire typeface for the whole set?
Yeah, it's mostly like, you know, thankfully being a lettering artist first and foremost, that allows me to focus more on the illustration side, because lettering is essentially illustration, because you're drawing letter forms. So when it comes to the projects like that, we're kind of like coming up with obviously the idea, what's the overall theme, and then kind of running with it from there. So that's kind of where the idea of, like, at least for in the terms of the Snapchat stickers, they were like tattoo inspired, and so it kind of needed to feel, you know, in that vein, at least in terms of like tattoo typography in a way. And then I think there was another pack that was more like psychedelic, and so of course we know we're dealing with like 70s, so that means like, okay, the type or the lettering for this is going to be, you know, reverse contrast, super bold, super funky, all kinds of like those types of, you know, 70s characteristics. So it kind of like makes it easy to understand, okay, if I know what the illustration style is, I automatically know what the lettering style is going to be, because you're kind of just trying to match the two, and or at least meld the two so that they feel, you know, cohesive at the end of the day.
Cool. And I keep hearing you correct yourself when you're using style, letter form, type.
Yeah.
And there was one more. So what's the difference, you know, so that a designer doesn't, incorrectly.
I mean, I'm using them all the time incorrectly. So it's okay for those of you that are, again, listening, like it happens all the time because they are so close together and they're used interchangeably. And it's like society as a whole is using them, you know, maybe not the best. Like at all, I probably started on like with computers, you know, a font is considered the very specific nuance of what you're selecting. So you could say the font is Times New Roman 12 point bold. That's the font. The typeface is Times New Roman. So that is the entire family. Because let's say in Times New Roman, there's, you know, five or six or however many styles. Sure. So that's the family. Lettering is drawing letter forms. Calligraphy is writing letter forms. Type design is essentially a mixture of both, but obviously a bit more digital nowadays because you are plotting points. And did I cover them all? Probably.
I think that was all of them for sure, man.
Yeah. Awesome. I get them all mixed up too. Like it's all the same to me. I don't really care what terminology people use. Like, you know, it's all good.
What's the most underused typeface that you think people should really be looking at today?
You know, I don't really have an answer to that because a majority of the work that I am doing is all lettering focused. So when it comes time to like setting type, I like rarely set type to the point where I'm like, I couldn't even tell you, you know, it's funny. I think being a typeface designer, folks kind of reach out to me and they're like, hey, what typeface is this? And I was like, I have no clue. Like, I have no idea. Like, I'm not that far removed, but removed enough where I still have no clue what, you know, what typeface is what. And so to answer your question, I have no idea. I truly have no idea.
Oh man, that's crazy. I'm in that boat. I would totally think that I could send you a typeface and be like, oh yeah, this is so and so.
Yeah. It's all good. Like, I don't mind it. I'll try my damnedest to like help people out, but I'm in the same boat. Like I'll use like my fonts or what the font has or my fonts has what the font where you can upload, you know, like a screenshot of like what typeface you're trying to identify. And there's other identifiers out there too, but I'll use the same tools because I don't know shit.
That's hilarious, man. That's cool, man. Awesome, dude. So what are you working on now that you can share as we kind of start wrapping this up, man?
I think more recently, I've been getting, so I'm actually going back to school for music, and I've been enjoying the process, but mm-hmm. I only bring this up because it's interesting how the projects I've been getting, for whatever reason, have been more like music oriented. So I just did 4 gig posters for a tech company, even though it's not like for music in the mm-hmm. in this sense of like a band. I got to do some gig posters for a tech company. I did some gig posters for a magazine just like a couple days ago, finished those up. And I've been doing a lot more like poster related work, it seems. And it's super fun for me because I get to do like some detailed illustration as well as like some super fun lettering too. So it's nice to like design the whole package from, you know, top to bottom and really like create a custom piece of artwork for the client. And I really enjoy doing stuff like that as opposed to like, you know, sometimes I'll do like janitorial vectoring work where they're like, hey, we want you to like, you know, clean up these splines in Illustrator. And like, sometimes I'll do that, right. But you know what I mean? Like that creatively is not as fulfilling as like obviously drawing a custom piece of artwork for a client. So I really love that kind of shit.
Yeah. And that's awesome. It's funny. Cause like, I remember just as a student, you would always think that you would get to draw a lot more posters than you actually do as a professional.
Yeah, it's true. Those projects are like very few and far between. So when they come around, I literally drop it. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it no matter what. Like I was like slammed with work last week and I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'll figure it out. I'll do it just so I can like, you know, feel creatively fulfilled.
That's awesome, man. And then you're going back to school for music. Like,
yeah.
Where does that, all right. So how does that fit in to, you know, Scott Bierzak?
Yeah.
2030.
2030. Yeah. I mean, my goal is, so literally one day I woke up and I was like, I got to make music. And then I was like, shit, I got to learn how. So that I don't know anything. So I didn't take band class. I didn't do any of that stuff, in high school. So I'm coming into it very fresh. So I'm like taking music theory 101 and I'm in music theory 201 right now and, a logic production class. So I'm trying to do a little bit of everything.
Did you buy like some teenage engineering hardware and stuff?
I have a MIDI keyboard. I got a guitar, you know, an audio interface. I got all the bells and whistles now. So I feel like I somewhat know what I'm doing. I'm like meandering around still, but, yeah, I mean, to like tie it back to design, it's, at some point I can see myself like, okay, if I get to the point of releasing music, I'm already a designer, so I don't need to hire out, you know, this design work. So, you know, whatever the album artwork is, single artwork, you know, promotional materials, all that stuff. I think it'll be nice to, you know, be a one-stop shop, if you will, to do it all. And I don't have to sort of like outsource any of that stuff and feel like my, you know, creative touch is, you know, implemented throughout every facet of an album release. If I get to that point, you know, that's like that's a big picture 2030 goal, I guess, is like release an album of some kind, but you know, I have no idea when and if I'll get to that point. So
dude, that's awesome, man. It's you know what's crazy is you're about the fifth designer, in late 20s, early 30s that is moving into music that I've talked to in the last couple of months.
Oh, nice.
Which is like insane because it's like I don't know. I think again, as you get older, you're kind of like, oh man, I got this one track. And it's such a different mentality of like, oh, I'm really interested in this. I'm going to go learn this. And you actually go and you actually do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do really well in school environments, which is why I signed up for the Berklee program. And I just told myself, like, if I'm going to learn music, I gotta go back to school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been doing it for about a year, almost a year now, which is nuts too. And yeah, I mean, like as creatives, I feel like we have so many outlets of creativity. And for me personally, it's not just design and lettering, you know, it's cooking, it's woodworking, it's whatever. Like, you know, there's so many ways that we can express our creativity. And I think thankfully now music has like become my new hobby. And I'm like crazy serious about it. Like I could see myself potentially just saying goodbye to design forever.
And that's like, insane.
Yeah. Like I'm pretty serious about it, man. So it's been fun.
That's awesome. That's cool, man. That's awesome. Awesome. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. people can find you at youbringfire.com.
Yeah, that's right.
And they can see all of your work. They can reach out to you via the site. Mm-hmm. I definitely implore anybody that's listening to check Scott out. I mean, you don't have like one specific style, which I think is what's great, is that you have a lot of range. Thanks. Can reach out to you.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I try to be more of a generalist in terms of like, you know, not focusing in on one particular thing. Because again, I get so bored, and then creatively, yeah, I need to like express myself in so many other styles. So yeah. For those of you listening, I can tackle anything you throw my way. So reach out. And yeah, thanks, man, for having me on. I appreciate it.
That's it for the show. Thanks so much for joining us on Package Design Unboxed. If you have any questions, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm always available for questions. Once again, check us out at PackageDesignUnboxed.com.